Missing this?
When that didn't materialise, I think both Paulie and myself probably looked at each other and kind of thought, what next?
Then get this, the all-new OTB Sports app. Off the Ball, Ireland's premier sports channel, now has a new home, featuring the biggest names in Irish and world sports. Podcasts, interviews, news, commentary, analysis, plus almost 20 years of sporting archives. All free and ready when you are, at home or on the go. The new OTB Sports app. Download it now from the App Store and Google Play.
The OTB Podcast Network with Virgin Media. Catch all of the UEFA Champions League and Europa League games live on Virgin Media TV.
Now then, you're very welcome back. So something pretty different from the football and the golf and the paper review. We're joined by Claire Walsh, I'm very happy to say, who is a free diver amongst many other things. Claire, you're very welcome. Great to have you with us.
Thank you very much for having me on.
A free diver. So I suspect I was thinking about this in advance. I would think you were in numerous social situations and the conversation is going along and what do you do and what do you do? And then you explain to people what you do. And I would say there's a certain type of face they make that you're very familiar with, followed by, but why?
100%. And to top it off, I worked as a puppeteer as well. So I just never really know where to go. Do I say puppeteer? Do I say free diver? Sometimes I lie and just say, I don't know, teacher.
Data input in an office. Ask no more questions. So free diving, I mean, I guess it's largely what it says on the tin in some respects, but you might just outline in broad terms what we're talking about here.
Yeah, absolutely. So free diving is the sport of holding your breath underwater. So I suppose most commonly people confuse it with scuba diving, so that's with apparatus, or often, you know, like diving from cliffs into water. But essentially it's lying flat on the surface of the water, holding your breath, and then descending as deep as you can go. And that's the sport of free diving. Mm-hmm.
You grew up in Leixlip, County Kildare.
That's right.
Okay. I'm Selbridge, County Kildare, so I was just down the road from you.
And I believe you went to Salesians.
I sure did.
I was a St. Wolston girls myself.
You were? No, geez, no way. Yeah. Right, okay. It's weird. Okay, small world. Now, from memory, the River Liffey was not that deep. So what was your relationship with water and swimming and this whole thing? When did you come to this in life?
Really late, 2015, I think I took my first freedive lesson. So I was 33 at the time. I suppose growing up, I would have done swimming quite regularly with my family. I would have trained to a certain extent, but like that, I was, you know, living in Leixlip. My grandmother lived out in Dunleary, so we did spend time going out to the sea. Dad would have been a bit of a sea swimmer, so I was always comfortable, or I always remember being comfortable in the water, but I wasn't free diving from the age of 4, 5, 6, 7, or 8 or anything like that. I was in my early 30s by the time I even learned what the sport was, which is pretty incredible.
I think it was in the Caribbean, you were doing some travels.
That's right, yeah.
You first encountered it, yeah.
Yeah, I was snorkeling with a bunch of lads in Belize, I think. And they kicked down from the surface and they went under, like into a little swim through, so a little cave.
Yeah.
I thought this was the coolest thing I'd ever seen in my life. And I would be quite competitive by nature. So I kicked down with them and sure my ears stopped me, you know, a meter or two below the surface. So very nonchalantly later on that night, probably over a beer, I asked them what it was. So they explained that this was free diving. And that night I, you know, started Googling, where do you do free diving? Where can I take a course? And I learned that the nearest place from Belize was an island off Honduras, so Utila, which is on that kind of Central America backpacking trail. And so I booked a plane and a train and an automobile over to give it a go, I think like 2 days later.
Wow. So that initial burst and thinking it's very cool, I get that, totally get that. And then how from 2015 and that initial experience, how does that segue into wanting to do it again the following year and the year after that? What is it about this very weird sport and the face of it that seems to hook you in?
Yeah, like I never would have thought it in a million years. So, you know, when you're traveling, you kind of tend to have a yes mentality. Yeah, I'll give it a go. So whether you're doing zip lining or scuba diving or whatever, you're in a different, you know, I suppose, mindset. So free diving was just one of those things. And I presumed that once I headed home, you know, that would be it. But that wasn't really the case. Once I returned home, so I went to Utilla, and I was supposed to stay there, I think, 2 weeks before heading off to wherever else was next on my map. But I stayed the remainder of my trip there. So I think I stayed a month there before going home. So once I arrived in Ireland, I was fired up, ready to go. How could I learn more about this? Where does it in Ireland? So, you know, I started learning about that. So I started going into the pool and practicing it there. I found a buddy in Dublin. So we worked together in the pool. And I think, you know, by Christmas, I had booked my trip for the following year. And I had said, right, I'll do 6 weeks out there and train some more. And then, you know, I'll leave it. I suppose for the first couple of years, it was a sport I tried to give up. It was expensive because predominantly you do it outside Ireland, particularly if it's depth. It's time consuming. You don't tend to go for like a week or 10 days. It's a much longer trip. But by the end of 2016, start of 2017, I knew I wanted it. I had to, you know, go deeper into it, and no pun intended. Yeah. I had to find out more about it. So I left everything. I sold my car, packed up my work, and I headed off to stay on that island for 6, 7, 8, 9 months and train as an instructor and just see where I could go with it.
Okay.
And that was the end.
Because I'm sure, I mean, on the face of it, your family are saying, Claire's having a breakdown here of some kind. You know what I mean? Like to give up car and go travel and do this. So were you kind of dissatisfied with life? Was it a bit mundane and boring and you were on the lookout for something anyway? Or were things going kind of nicely enough for you before almost it was railroaded by this new love that you had?
Yeah, good question. I think it has to be a bit of both. You can't be wholly satisfied and then still be thinking about something else. Yeah. So yeah, I think a series of events, I'm trying to remember back end of 2016, yeah, work had kind of changed. And I suppose I had to make some decisions around that. So an opportunity presented itself. But I think since then, since coming home, the end of 2017, freediving is now, it's quite a big factor into the work I do. So, you know, now I will try to timetable in or schedule in trips to go and train because it's now the importance has kind of elevated, I guess, since then, and particularly since World Championships last year.
Yeah. So you mentioned there that initially when you got home, you were doing some training in swimming mm-hmm. pools. So surface training, I presume, head down, hold your breath for as long as you can. So yeah. Like in my book, we've all been kids and held our breath under the bath. You know, it's just what you do. There's not that much that's enjoyable about it. I mean, maybe that so like the first time you do it, there's a novelty value. And maybe the second time you beat your first score. But like pretty quickly, most of us reach the end of that road and it's not that pleasant a thing to do, to just hold your breath, you know. So what is it about taking time out of your life to go to a swimming pool and recruit a training partner and just hold your breath again and again and again that you found enjoyable? Like I would find it painful in the chest after a while.
Well, you know what? You're kind of spot on, to be dead honest with you. Pool training, or so what you're describing is called static apnea. So lying still, holding your breath. And that's one discipline. And then other disciplines that we do in the pool are, you know, you measure in distance. So again, something that you see loads of kids doing it in the pool, you know, how many lengths can they do? And then they come up gasping. What's the appeal? That there's very little, to be dead honest with you. Okay. It's by no means comfortable, but in static apnea, so that's the one lying still, it'll typically be your longest breath hold. That's where you learn the foundation for depth diving. And for me, depth diving is where it's at.
Right.
It is the most incredible sensation, and that's the dangling carrot. So unless I put in the groundwork in the pool, you know, I'm not going to progress in my whatever 6 week trip I have planned, you know, in a few weeks time.
Okay, so I understand.
So that's where you kind of push through.
Okay, that's the training to be able to do exactly. The deep dive. So you've been down 60 meters below sea level. How does that work? Is that a rope to guide yourself down all the way?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a couple of different disciplines. So my 60 meter dive is called free immersion. And that's exactly it. There's a rope from the surface down weighted to 60 meters below. And you pull yourself down until about 20, 23 meters. At that point, you're negatively buoyant. and you go into what's called free fall. So you don't have to do anything to get yourself down there. You just need to stay as relaxed as possible, and you'll get down there. Right. So once you hit the 60, you take a tag, which is, I suppose, proof that you've been down there, turn, and then it takes quite a bit of effort to come up from that point, particularly at the 60 meters, because you're so negatively buoyant. Okay. So yeah, you pull yourself up, but you know, margins are so important at that point. So you don't want to, you know, race out of the gate. You need to conserve energy and, most importantly, oxygen.
I can imagine. Okay, that is fascinating. So you pull the rope down to that point where you become negatively buoyant. Now, yeah. Nobody listening has been down that far. So when you get down that far, do you still have to kick your legs to keep going further?
No,
or will you
not
you
at
will
all.
Just you'll just sink.
You just sink. And again, you know, the first time you experience free fall, it's scary. It's intimidating because you don't have control over it. So there is an element of, I suppose, negotiation with your mind to be able to let go. I remember, you know, for quite a long time, I used to kick all the way or make small little movements, just, I suppose, to pretend to myself that I had any control over this.
Yeah.
But that's the whole skill of freediving. It's just as much a mental sport as it is a physical sport. So once you hit into a free fall and you allow your mind to, I guess, soften or stay soft or relaxed, mm-hmm. And your body follows suit, free fall is an incredible experience. Like, we're weightless, you know, who experiences that? Not many people get a chance to do that. Mm. So it's a really incredible experience if everything lines up.
Okay.
It's really magnificent.
Okay, no, I get that. So like, it's kind of been in some kind of gravitational room at NASA in some respects. you just bombed down. Wow.
Yeah.
And kicking your way back up to where you're no longer negatively buoyant.
Yeah.
How fast are you kicking your legs? I mean, because you're trying to hold your breath and you don't want to expend energy or use up oxygen. I mean, is it a bit of a sprint kick or are you going very gently?
So with that one, if you pull down, you pull up. If you kick down, you kick up. So again, that's where the different disciplines come into it. So for the 60 meters, that's free immersion and that's pulling down on a rope. And then you come up the exact same way.
Okay.
So you pull up. So you're spot on. You need to be really conservative. And it's about finding that balance of efficiency. So obviously I need to come up with some sort of speed at that point, but I need to find that sweet spot of not exerting all my energy, because that's just going to chew through oxygen. And once you hit 20 meters and then 10 on the way up, that's when, you know, those margins really, really come into play in terms of staying conscious.
People must die doing this sport, do they?
The question I love. Yes and no. Yes, of course, there is an inherent risk. You are holding your breath underwater. Most commonly, the fatalities in the sport are among spear fishermen. So they're still holding their breath underwater. And I suppose there are very, very strict rules to the sport. One is don't hyperventilate to prepare and make sure you're weighted correctly. So, you know, this is a massive generalization, and I'm by no means inferring that spear fishermen are not skilled. But, you know, I think with the accessibility to YouTube and videos, I think a lot of people are self-taught when it comes to freediving. Mm. In fact, I'd get many messages through Instagram or whatever going, I watched this video, can you give me a tip? And the very first thing I will say is take a course with a professional instructor, because why would you take that risk? So yes, there is an inherent danger. Yes, people have died freediving. But I suppose something I feel quite passionately about is dispelling the myth of danger around it. You know, it's always described to me in interviews as, you know, people ask me, what's it like to take part in the second most dangerous sport in the world? That's not my experience of it. Mm. So, yes, I am respectful of the water. I'm respectful of my limits. And more so, I'm respectful of the people who are safe in me, because you never, ever, ever dive alone. you will have a minimum of one other diver with you, preferably two, possibly three.
And Claire, I was just going to say, am I right in saying, did you lost consciousness approaching the surface at one event?
I lost consciousness when I broke the surface.
When you broke the surface, okay.
Yeah, and I started, so once you get to the surface, if you're in a competition, there's a procedure you need to go through. So it's called the surface protocol. So the first thing you do is remove your facial equipment. And in my situation, it's my face mask. So I take that, pop that on my head, I signal an okay sign, and I say, I'm okay. That's the three things you do as soon as you come up. Sure. So you recover, you're breathing, and you do this. I broke the surface, and instead of doing that, those three maneuvers that come so automatically to me, I reached for the tag that I'd gotten at the bottom, which was stuck in my hood. And my family were watching the dive, and you know, this is a new thing to them. They're watching the dive with a couple of my friends who are divers. And when my friends saw me, reach for the tag, they just went, oh no. Mm. They knew I wasn't fully there. So I didn't do my recovery breathing. And because of that, you know, I was obviously on the cusp of hypoxia. And if I'd had a coach with me, they would have seen the signs. They would have seen me reaching for that tag. And what they could have done was scream into my face, Claire, breathe. And usually that would be enough to get an athlete to realize what they need to do. I didn't have a coach with me. I didn't do that recovery breath. And I did lose consciousness for, okay, I don't know, 10, 15 seconds.
Okay. And does an experience like that rattle you or put you off?
Well, I'd be lying through my teeth if I said it didn't.
Yeah.
It was so weighted. It was such a weighted experience. It was my first time competing in a big competition like that. It's the World Championships. You have the top divers, you know, sharing the same athlete boat as you. And these are divers I've looked up to. I've watched their, you know, set their webinars, attended workshops. You know, they're the top dogs, and you're there with them. So there's, you know, possibly imposter syndrome happening there. Conditions weren't super. I also had a lot of family, and friends who came over to watch, which was an amazing support. But obviously, you do feel that pressure as well. So that was my first dive, and the first thing that I remember when I regained consciousness was, oh, my family had to watch that. Mm. I couldn't remember where it happened or how it looked, because I know from, I've worked as a safety diver myself, they can look pretty scary. And I didn't remember, you know, obviously where it happened, so it could have looked worse than it was. Luckily, my family were watching with friends. They were able to explain, you know, what was happening, what would happen next, and said, look, hang on, give Claire half an hour, and she'd be back on her phone and saying that she's okay, which I was. Mm. But, you know, there's an element of wanting to protect them. This is a sport that's so precious to me, that my family and friends are so open-minded about me doing it. I didn't want to taint, you know, their first experience of seeing me dive.
Yeah.
But they were terrific. And actually, a kind of really nice follow-up to that, in the athlete village on the big screen was where people obviously were watching the dives. And there was a delay of about an hour of the dive. So by the time I came back and got back to them, my dive came up. And in absolute true Irish supporter mode, if goodwill could have changed the outcome of that dive, they would have. Mm. And it just so happened that there were other Irish people in Nice, and they had come down to watch it as well. So I had this big gang of people cheering my name as I ascended. Meanwhile, I'm going, lads, we know what happens at the end of this, don't we? But it was such a tremendous moment of, it's Irish supporters. And seeing Irish supporters in a freediving event, okay, the outcome wasn't particularly favourable, but it was tremendous. So I had to get my head in shape for the next dive a few days later.
Yeah, I would suspect so. You said when you first, back in 2015, tried to go underwater to the caves with that group that your ears popped and it was a disaster, and you're kind of nowhere near that level. And now you're at a point where you're approaching the ability to hold your breath for 6 minutes.
Yeah.
How quickly do you go from complete beginner, and I don't know actually how long an adult on average can hold their breath for initially, how quickly can you go from bang average beginner to 6 minutes?
I I started quite high. I think my first breath hold, so that static apnea, my first attempt was, I say it was 4:17, and a friend argues it was 4:07.
Okay.
It was definitely over 4 minutes, which is quite a solid attempt for a beginner. When I came back out that following year and we started working on static apnea a little bit more, I found myself regressing. I was hitting 3.5 minutes, and then 3, and then 2:45, and then 2:30. And that was the biggest, I suppose, lesson, or one of the lessons, in how mental this sport is. So, you know, your approach is everything, and the expectations you have on yourself. I needed to make so many adjustments to progress. So I remember being stuck at 3 minutes for quite a long time. And I was doing my instructor course at the time, and you needed to have 5 minutes to pass it.
Mm.
So, you know, the more I practiced and the more pressure I put on myself, you know, the shorter time I was getting, and then seeing the big distance between that and the 5 minutes. And I think it was one moment or one morning, there wasn't a whole load of people around. I hadn't planned to do it. And I just grabbed a coach and I said, come here, we're just going to have a go at this. So I kind of treated it as, okay, well, look, this is a warm up. This is, see how I get on. And I think I hit 5:18 on that one.
Mm.
So just stripping away the pressure and learning to soften. And I use that word a lot when it comes to freediving, and soften your body to, you know, physical tension and mental expectations.
Mm.
And that's when you yield the best results, I guess.
Okay, very interesting. Because with most high-risk sports, it is high octane and adrenaline. And mm-hmm. you're developing almost a capacity in the area of calm and softening.
Absolutely.
And probably not trying to think too much. Yeah, I would think, you know, all of that maybe it contributes to it, or does it? I don't know. Does adrenaline make you want to breathe in sharper?
100%. And, yeah. So adrenaline equals higher heart rate, which means your breathing gets shorter and shallower. And I did mention about hyperventilation.
Mm.
So that's the quickest shortcut to a blackout. You know, taking in as much oxygen as possible and dispelling CO2, we actually need it.
Okay.
It's the easiest way to blackout. So there's a real challenge, whether it's coming up to a competition dive or a target dive, and deciding, right, I'm doing my 60 meters today. So obviously, like any athlete, you know, you're going to get a little spike in heart rate.
Mm.
The nerves are going to start to kick in, and that adrenaline is going to start moving through your body, your fight or flight. Like I mentioned, I've worked as a performer, whether that's singing or, you know, puppetry or whatever it
yeah.
is, and you tend to use that adrenaline.
Yeah, it's an advantage. It sharpens you up. It's
exactly.
something. Yeah. So you. And so that feeling you. Yeah. So that feeling you would have before a performance. As a puppeteer, where you know, okay, this sharpens me up and I can use this. If you're about to deep dive, that little bit of adrenaline, you're thinking, I don't want, this is bad. Okay, you need to be as calm as you are going to bed almost.
That's the best way to describe it.
Okay.
I might rob that in the future.
Okay, do. So what do you do with all the nerves? You can't be nervous then.
Well, you know, telling yourself you can't be nervous, it's like telling yourself, right, you know, when you just instruct someone to relax.
Mm.
If I tell myself to be nervous, the very first thing that I'm going to feel is a butterfly in my tummy. So much preparation kind of goes into that. So whether that's a routine. So I know for me, my morning routine, so dives are typically done early enough in the day. I'll get up. There's a stretching routine that I do. And then I go into long stretches. And then once that's done, I suppose the real preparation starts. Gom let go. And that's meditation. If I am nervous, I journal. And it sounds cheesy, but it's just about leaving any negative thoughts that you have, you know, behind.
Mm-hmm.
Writing them down, going, right, if there's anything valid here, I will come back to it later. I cannot bring it underwater. I will not bring it with me underwater. So there's so much around your breathing, your preparation, and of course your headspace. Thoughts use oxygen, so you want to keep them as neutral as possible, and, you know, as relaxed as possible.
Okay. How, so 6 minutes is about your length. I think the female world record is in excess of 9 minutes.
9:02.
Okay. How much fuel are you using up? How close to empty are you going when you go down 60 meters? How long does that take?
I'm a particularly slow diver. So a depth dive will always be a shorter time. I do 60 in 215, 220.
Okay. Yeah. So you've loads in the tank, actually.
But you're also then moving a lot more. So you're using a lot
energy.
More oxygen.
Right.
But just going back to that 902, the world record by Natalia, I've watched that dive so many times. There's a recording of it.
Right.
She lifts her head after 902 minutes, like she's just held her breath for 20 seconds.
Right.
She is extraordinary. You know, it takes nothing out of her. She looks so fresh when she finishes it. It is remarkable.
And would she have a genetic predisposition, be it her VO2 max or lung capacity?
She's Russian. She was a professional swimmer. In 2015, she did pass away in a diving accident.
Right.
So she would have, I suppose, common thought is she's possibly one of the best free divers in the world. She started freediving when she was 42, I think,
right.
And set all the female world records over the span of her career.
Right, okay. God, that's stark. I didn't realise she'd passed away.
Yeah, and actually her son, Alexei, he is the male champion. So he holds world records in possibly two of the disciplines now.
Mm. So what do you think about, if anything, when you're going down and coming back up?
So the very first thing I do at the start of a dive is, this is cheesy, is remind myself why I love doing this. So the very start of the dive, you know, the first pulls into the water are, you have to overcome buoyancy, so they take a little bit more effort. So I just remind myself with a bit of a positive affirmation, you know, it's a beautiful day for diving, Claire, enjoy your dive, off you go.
Mm.
And you know, it always sounds silly saying it, you know, above water, but it's just to set up your mind for the rest of the dive. And you have to remind yourself, no, so it is uncomfortable. There is elements that are uncomfortable, but you have to just kind of at least set off on the journey in the right headspace.
Yes.
So I do a lot of singing in my work. And so very often I'll have some song in my head at the time. And I usually use the rhythm of that to get me down to the 20 meters.
Yeah.
Once I start into free fall, you know, the idea is, I suppose, to keep your mind as blank as possible. In my experience, you know, nature abhors a vacuum. So if I leave it empty, invariably a negative thought will come in. Mm. So just positive affirmations. It's nothing too profound.
Right.
Whether some people sing the Just Keep Swimming song, you know, it's anything that'll just give your mind something small to hook onto.
Yeah.
To stop any thoughts coming in, and then keeping the body as relaxed as possible.
And 60 meters down, is it pitch black all around you?
It really depends where you dive. So usually I've done my 60 meters in Dahab in Egypt, in the Blue Hole. And it's incredible. The visibility is about 30 meters.
Wow.
So obviously it's dark and the light changes, but you still get those rays of light coming through. It is incredible.
Wow.
On the way down, I usually have my eyes closed. And then when I turn, I open them. And it's really, really incredible to see how the light changes with depth. Obviously, it gets brighter as you come up near the surface. And it's visually really satisfying as well.
Mm. And you know, so if I'm faffing around on holiday and I swim underwater as long as I can, and then when I'm coming up for air, I'm like counting down the seconds to get there, and I hit the surface and kind of gulp in a breath of air, you know, leave it to the last second. As you're going up, those last 20, 15 meters, I would presume rushing is a bad thing, and that's something you want to avoid.
Yeah.
But I mean, are you ever like in those last 10, 15 meters saying, oh, I'd really like to be on the surface now? Like, is it ever that last gasp?
No. And even that thought in itself, I'm kind of shaking my head as I'm hearing it, because that's telling your body something, you know. So when I, on my way up, so from usually about 50 meters to the top, what I'm going through in my head is, take off the mask signal, I'm okay. I'm just repeating my surface protocol, reminding myself what I'm going to do as soon as I hit the surface. So that just keeps my mind trained in on something to distract maybe a little bit if it is uncomfortable. And then, you know, once I hit the surface, recover and go straight into that surface protocol. Okay. So it's there, it's fresh. I don't have to think about what I'm going to do. But no, seldom are you thinking about, oh gosh, I need to hit the surface now.
Okay. So how has all the, like 5 years, that's a dramatic change in your life, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
How has life changed now? How does all this fit into your life? You know, did you re-buy a car and do a different career?
Yeah,
or is this your full-time pursuit, or are you doing different bits and bobs?
A bit of both.
Okay.
2018, I was mainly in Ireland, and I kind of picked up work again and tried to settle down, I guess. And by the end of 2018, it just felt like square peg, round hole. Mm. It just didn't fit. Kind of some things that happened in my life, and physically and mentally, I wasn't in brilliant shape. And by November 2019, I wanted a project. I wanted a big project that I could sink my teeth into. And I knew the World Championships were the following September. And I remember emailing the organizers and saying, look, you know, there won't be an Irish team. I'm usually going to team. Can I submit my numbers and, you know, apply to go as an individual? And you know those things where you do it and go, well, look, I've done it. I was almost hoping for them to reply and say, no, that's not possible. Because yeah. Then at least I'll have tried.
Yes, nothing I can do.
So, yeah, exactly. So I think I sent off the email in November, and early January they got back to me and said, yeah, you're good to go.
Wow.
Oh, okay, right, now I have to do this. Okay, right. So I suppose that was the start of the big project from November 2018. Right up to October of 2019, because I came home and then went straight into another competition in Cyprus. And I learned so much about freediving last year that I just feel like I'm at the tip of the iceberg at this point. I learned so much. I suppose I changed how I dived. I kind of went back to basics and relearned a lot of things, because diving for yourself is quite different to diving in a competitive environment. And I was working with a really terrific coach, Nathan Binsky, in Egypt. And by the time the World Championships, so they were really tough mentally and physically, kind of going from that first dive to the next dive, which was 4 days later, which was a successful dive, and then one more dive after that. So that was a really mentally challenging experience. And I felt like I needed a palate cleanser after that. I needed to not necessarily die for fun, but I needed more experience in a competitive environment. And yeah, basically that, to just cleanse my palate of that World Championships experience.
Mm.
So I headed to Cyprus shortly after that.
Right. Okay. And so, I mean, look, COVID has thrown everything up in the air, I suspect.
It has.
Is the plan, once quote unquote normal resumes, to keep competing and to go again in this whole area?
Absolutely. And I suppose that's what I was leading to. You know, my life now, free diving is a big part of it. So once I returned home in October, I made all these plans for 2020. My first competition was to be in April in Mexico. And then I was to go to Egypt for training in July, and then spend my time between Egypt and Ireland, because here is my base, here is my home. Mm-hmm. I love Irish waters. I swim in the sea kind of all year round, and there's amazing communities around that here. So, you know, I teach breath workshops, I teach free diving workshops, and I teach singing and breathing for singing. So the idea, you know, best case scenario for 2020 was to split my time working here, running workshops, and then going abroad training. So I almost feel reluctant to make plans for 2021 at this stage.
Yeah.
Like anyone.
Yeah.
But yeah, as soon as I can, I'll head off and hit some warm water and a bit of depth, hopefully.
Wow, absolutely amazing. Well, listen, Claire Walsh, thanks so much for coming on, telling your story. Hopefully, like everyone, you can get back to plans and get going again. Phenomenal. I'd say the next couple of years are going to be interesting. Thanks so much. Much appreciated.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Cheers.
The OTB Podcast Network with Virgin Media. Catch all of the UEFA Champions League and Europa League games live on Virgin Media TV.